Coming up on Tech News Today, we talk about what Apple's Samsung patent decision means to you, what's coming and not coming from Apple, a.k.a. Apple TV, and Facebook's fancy new digs, what that means for their financial outlook. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, August 27th, 2012. Tech News Today is brought to you by the new Squarespace. Squarespace introduces a new content management system, making it faster and easier to create a high-quality website or blog. Plus, more than 50 new features, including mobile responsive designs with automatic device scaling. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT8. And by RingCentral. We do everything in the cloud. That's why we love our cloud-based phone system by RingCentral. Zero startup costs, and RingCentral is $20 a month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial, and buy one desk phone, get a second phone free up to 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use our promo code TWIT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Ayaz Akhtar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
Father Robert Ballasaire back again on a Monday to join us to dig into the discussion stories in a bit. But let's start with the top 10 stories of the day in the news feeds. Of course, many of you know, on Friday, the jury ruled mostly in Apple's favor against Samsung in that patent case, awarding $1.049 billion in damages. But it's not over yet. Apple intends to ask the court to ban sales of Samsung's infringing devices. Judge Koh will hear arguments on sales bans and the like September 20th. Samsung also will likely appeal the case once all that is finished, meaning that the bans probably wouldn't go into place right away if they are granted. Meanwhile, Google responded to the case, saying in an official statement that the claim involved, quote, don't relate to the core Android operating system, so they're not worried.
But that's not all. Samsung also wants the Galaxy Tab 10.1 sales ban in the U.S. overturned and is demanding damages for lost sales from Apple after the tablet was found not to infringe on any patents. Now, you might recall back in June, Apple secured a preliminary injunction against the Galaxy Tab 10.1, and Judge Lucy Koh called it virtually indistinguishable from iPads 1 and 2. The latest jury didn't agree, though, and has ruled the Tab 10.1 did not infringe on Apple's IP, possibly giving Samsung an opportunity to get back some of the $2.6 million bond Apple posted to secure the block.
No more Samsung stuff. Let's talk about TechCrunch that reports that the rumored deal to sell About.com is true. The New York Times company will sell About.com and two other properties to IAC for $300 million in cash. The Times paid $410 million for the site way back in 2005. IAC owns a number of online properties, including Ask.com, CitySearch.com, Vimeo, and more.
Yeah, and that's Barry Diller's company, IAC. He's the guy behind Aereo as well. Dropbox is testing two-step login verification with users who install the experimental build of their software. The functionality will roll out to all users within a few days, they say. Users will need to activate the feature in their account settings. Dropbox will then require unrecognized machines to provide a code from either an authenticator app or a text message that they'll send to you. You can also get an emergency code to disable the feature if you lose your phone.
All Things D says their sources are confirming the rumors that the iPhone and iPad mini will debut at two separate events this fall rather than a single one as was originally reported. Now, we don't know who those sources are, so you can't really call it a confirmation, but that's what they're saying. The iPhone event is still expected on September 12th, though. Journalists are still waiting for their invites, but that's the expected date. After the iPhone ships, the rumor is now that Apple will announce the smaller iPad it's been working on at a second special event, which sources said is slated for October.
Amazon is touting that its Prime service ships more items than its lower-priced Super Saver service. The company also says that Prime now applies to 15 million items. Amazon Prime costs about $80 a year and gives its users free two-day shipping on items. The Super Saver service is offering orders over $25. Amazon also said that the Kindle and the Kindle Fire are the top two items sold with Prime, but didn't mention how many units were sold of either.
Apple won another patent victory on Friday, though not as decisively as the one against Samsung. The U.S. International Trade Commission ruled Apple did not violate 3 Motorola patents. A 4th patent regarding the sensor that detects when your face comes close to a phone was sent back to Administrative Law Judge Thomas Pender for reconsideration. This is the resolution of complaints filed in October 2010. If you're thinking, hey, Motorola just filed these, that's a separate complaint that was filed against Apple last week.
Saudi Aramco, which is the world's biggest oil producer, says that it has resumed operating its main internal computer networks after a virus infected about 30,000 of its workstations earlier this month. Immediately after the August 15th attack, the company announced it had cut off electronic systems from outside access to prevent any further attacks. Saudi Aramco says that the workstations have been cleansed of the virus. Everything's restored back to service. Oil exploration and production were not affected because they operated on isolated systems.
Google has complied with a court order to disclose any financial relationships with anyone who commented on their court case against Oracle. Google named a dozen people, including a staff member who posted on Twitter, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, former intern Timothy B. Lee, who now writes for Ars Technica, and a tech dirt writer, Mike Masnick. Masnick worked for the Computer and Communication Industry Association once, which Google once contributed money to. So very broadly including anyone in this report.
OptiArc, Inc. is shutting down, according to reports. Why should you care? Well, OptiArc is Sony's subsidiary that makes optical disc drives for PCs. The sub is being closed due to fierce competition, forcing super low prices. However, Sony's DVD player and Blu-ray production will continue in its device solutions division.
Device solutions. We'll solve those devices. This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by the new Squarespace.com. Now faster and easier than ever to create a high-quality website or blog that looks great on any device. One thing about creating a blog these days, it's not just somebody sitting at a big old beige desktop looking at your website anymore. They're looking at it on laptops with multiple screen sizes. They're looking at it on tablets. They're looking at it on phones. Phone screen sizes are anywhere from 2.5 up to 6 inches, practically, in some cases. So Squarespace's new service is perfect for taking the pain out of that. They will resize your website automatically so it looks perfect on whatever device somebody's using. 7 ways they'll version your site. And it looks great. They've got brand new templates that accommodate to that. So they take your images, they make 7 different versions of them automatically. They put them into the website in a way that makes sense, no matter what device you're looking on it, and you don't have to do a thing unless you want to. Plus, they've improved that drag-and-drop functionality that we love for all their customization tools. A new page builder tool called the Layout Engine enables you to customize page in seconds. You just add blocks of content. You want to add some photos? You want to add some videos? You want to add some social media, Twitter stuff? You just put it right in there. New Squarespace gives you all of these tools to try out for free. You don't even need to give them a credit card number, nothing. Just go to squarespace.com, start a website right now. And then if you decide to pay for it, if you decide to keep the service, which I think you might want to because it's pretty darn incredible what they've done here, use the offer code TNT8 and get 10% off your first purchase on new Squarespace accounts. So if you pay for a monthly account, you'll get 10% off that first month. Or if you pay by the year, if you go for the annual account, you'll get 10% off the entire year. And don't forget, if you do pay for that annual plan, you get a free domain name with annual plan subscriptions. That's squarespace.com. Use the offer code TNT8. And we thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. All right, Father Robert, bring you into the conversation. Thanks for joining us today.
Always a pleasure to be back on TNT.
You've been around the Twit Studio quite a bit lately, but you're going to go back to a more normal schedule soon.
Right. So this is sort of the end of my summer of content. I got 6 weeks to hang around California, and most of that time I spent in the basement of the Brick House. But now I have to go back to D.C. So,
well, yeah. We're sorry to see you go, but we understand. It's been great having you in person. But we will be seeing you on Skype as well as flying out here occasionally.
Yes, flying out.
Let's start with this Apple-Samsung trial that, of course, broke Friday evening. We did live coverage right here on Twit, breaking down all the pieces of the hundreds of pages of deliberation. But a couple of things that came out over the weekend that I found fascinating were interviews with different jurors. CNET's Greg Sandoval got one of the jurors, Manuel Yagan, and the foreman of the jury, Hogan, was interviewed by Reuters. And it looks like the reason they came back so quickly is that they very quickly all agreed that Apple's patents had been infringed. They spent the first day with, they said some heated discussions about it, but they all sort of, it was one of those arguments, it sounds like, where you all go, wait, we're all arguing about the fact that we agree. So we agree Apple infringed.
Samsung.
Or I'm sorry, that Apple was infringed, that Samsung infringed. So let's go and look at the worksheet and just work down the sheet and say, okay, did that phone have that patent infringement check, 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 check. And that's why they were able to come back with the deal so quickly.
One of the biggest problems I see here, and you know, I understand that the standards for jury misconduct is really, really high to get something thrown out. So I don't think the stories coming out will qualify as jury misconduct. But you have a foreman who, first of all, why was a patent holder on the jury? I mean, why wasn't that found out during the discovery process?
Well, it was. I'm sure it was found out. Your question is, why did the lawyers...
they let him? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Why was it? And then, but you've also got... You've got other jurors who are saying, oh, yeah, we were a little confused by the prior art, but once he explained it to us, we were all good. You don't do that. I mean, if you have questions about a part of the case, you're supposed to go back to the judge and say, we're unsure about X. Not, oh, we've got an expert in our foreman, and he's going to tell us how we should be voting on
it. Depends on how it goes down. But is there a way that that's okay where Hogan can say, like, all right, the judge has defined prior art here. This is my experience with prior art. Can he share his experience?
Yeah, sure he could. I mean, the thing is, it's kind of like you're supposed to be judged by a jury
of your peers. Yeah.
This guy's a patent holder. At this point, being a patent holder isn't that difficult in the first place. At this point, you've seen ads on television all the time like, you have an idea? Go get it patented. So maybe that's not so strange. But the idea is, I was on a jury where we were talking about trespass, and it was explained to us what the law was. And this is way back before law school. But the idea is, if somebody understands it to be different, they can explain it all they want. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't think it'll be misconduct by any means. Mm-hmm. It just seems like, okay, people might be more likely to listen to him on the jury. But when you trap those people together in the room, they might want to get out quickly. That's what was standing out to me, that it only took like 3 days, considering the complexity of the case. But, I mean, some of the statements made by Hogan, it seemed really simple. Like, Apple proved their case. And so they just had to figure out what to do from there.
Yeah. Manuel told CNET that the emails from executives discussing let's put Apple features into our phones, they found particularly compelling. And then that combined with the pictures that Apple showed on the last day of testimony of the Samsung phones before the iPhone was released and the Samsung phones after the iPhone release, they found that very damning for Samsung, that the design changed so dramatically. And that's one of the reasons he said that they found willful infringement is they were talking about it, they did it, and the evidence to them showed that they infringed. This was a competent jury. 4 of the 9 jury members have experience working for technology companies, including Intel and AT&T. And Hogan, as we mentioned, the foreman, had a was a patent holder, and he worked for a hard drive company. The question that comes out of this, as we mentioned in the news few, Samsung's likely going to appeal to federal circuit court. Best bet if they appeal is they'll get a reduction in the damages. They probably won't get the decision overturned, but they could change the amount. It could fall below $1 billion. That hearing on whether there will be injunctions about the sales ban will come September 20th. Usually the way these things go is whether there's a ban put in place or not, it's usually not actually put into effect until an appeal is finished. An appeal is going to take a couple of years. So by the time this is all said and done, the Samsung phones that are infringing here will either be very low sellers or off the market.
Yeah, certainly phased out.
Now, we got an email from Chad. He says, you guys always talk about how software patents harm innovation. What I'd like to know is, how do they do that exactly? Why is copying the functionality someone else came up with innovative? Apple owns the patents on Slide to Unlock. Supposedly, they didn't. Everyone copied it. How is that innovative? But he says, suppose they didn't. I think patents foster innovation by forcing people and companies to do things differently. Please explain how software patents harm innovation. Now, he's loading the question, but... The patent system was put in place to encourage innovation, and one criticism we do hear often is, well, it's not working. It's actually harming innovation. The argument against is Samsung saying, look at this. You know, we do what everyone considers pretty obvious behavior here. You know, all the smartphones are doing it, and we get hammered. Now we have to spend billions of dollars. We have to spend time on lawyers. That's time that should be spent doing research. And in innovating on things. And we can't, because you're afraid if you innovate something, you'll accidentally tread on someone else's patent.
Accidentally seems to be the key word there. It's like, it's not an accident. Their patents are published, okay? These are public. And if you're going to spend billions of dollars on research, you could do it on the research, like actually check if this was made already. And the thing is, when it comes to the innovation aspect, a lot of people are slightly annoyed that you could have from phone to phone just different UIs. Like pinch to zoom has got to be slightly different, or to unlock has got to be different. That people, consumers lose because there's only one company that uses it that way, and we could have a bunch of really, really fragmented experiences. But to say, like, oh, by the way, Apple made something really obvious, and we copied it, that seems like it's a little strange, because if it was so obvious, why didn't you do it first? Because you could have held all these patents as well. It's always like it's like a race to that to the patent office.
Well, if it's and if also it's something that Samsung's like, we don't know how to get around this. I mean, there's just so many ways that you can do it. Then why isn't it a friend patent that should be licensed more?
An essential patent that you that has to be licensed at reasonable terms.
Can't you just argue that, hey, we don't have many other options here. We're now in a situation where the UI, we can't just start from scratch, and you're going to have to license this to us. What are you laughing at?
To get around it, I mean, Slides Unlock is a touchscreen-based device. You could just have a switch on a phone called an on-off button. Like, I mean, this existed before. So, like, to work around it is really easy. And the other thing is the Slides Unlock is based on, again, it's from A to B in a predefined predefined path. All you have to do is have, remember the Samsung UI, the TouchWiz, where it was like puzzle piece to puzzle piece? There was no, like, defined line between them. Mm-hmm. So that did work around the patent because it's not telling you in a predefined path, but it is explained to you, by the way, you want to take this and put it over here. So, I mean, to say that, I mean, there's so many ways to work around it because the patents are clear. They're written out. So just work around it.
Yeah, I think that where the discussion becomes difficult is ideally the patent system, I think, it does work well, which says, like, look, you have to narrowly define what you're patenting. So that, yeah, you can't just patent the idea of sliding something, right?
You can't patent ideas at
you
all.
You have to patent your method, your way of doing slide unlock. And that's why Iaz is always saying it's easy to design around it. Just don't do the path. Don't do the exact thing that Apple did. Do something slightly different. Well, the problem is the patent system is so complicated. It is so vast that for small companies, it's difficult to actually pay the money to take the time and do all that research. So they fear that they may tread on something, but they just kind of power forth anyway. And on top of that, we have a different situation in the internet and software than we did when the patent system was created in the 1700s. Things move faster. And so we want to say, well, it's obvious, right? Because we've been dealing with it for 2 or 3 years. In internet time, that's a lifetime. But Iaz is right. If it was obvious, everybody would have been doing it for a long time. We just get used to things really fast. And maybe the patent system for software and internet and technology needs to take that into account.
When you ask, how does this hurt innovation? I would point to that example. I would say, look, if you are a startup, if you're a young company, if you're trying to break into this market, it's impossible right now. You have to be an established player like a Samsung or Nokia or a Microsoft to even have the resources to look at the patents that currently exist and determine where you have to make changes to your design. That kills innovation off the bat. It means that unless you are a multi-billion, multinational company, you can't even get into the market. So, okay. Now, I do believe you have to protect the investment that companies have made into the development of their product. Apple obviously deserved something from Samsung because if you look at those early Samsung phones, yeah, they looked a lot like the iPhone 3GS. They deserved an award for that. Now, how much of an award and how much of a chilling effect should this have on future phones? Because if you look at Samsung's current generation of Android phones, they look nothing like the 3GS or the 4. But because some of those patents are a little vague, the rounded corners and the way the icons look, you can still sue or get an injunction on the S3 or, say, the Nexus or the Note 2 when you really shouldn't be able to.
Well, I mean, okay, look, I don't know when technology became this, like, oh, it's like a mom-and-pop restaurant kind of thing. You know, getting into the car business, very, very difficult. To get into technology, it seems like, it's going to be a very, very high barrier to entry at this point. So theoretically, what this would mean for innovation in general would be, okay, look, I can't make a smartphone. I can't make a UI. I need to go do something else. So you might see companies like Leap show up. They're going to do, like, wireless control where you can actually, like, make gestures. What you would do is you take your talent and you shift it because they go, oh, my gosh, we can't possibly play in that field. We need to go to a different field.
Well, but I think that's what pisses everyone off, right, is the internet has brought along the promise of, hey, things are easy now. You know, it used to be that you would have to go into a big, expensive recording studio to make an album, but now you can do it on your laptop. And so the patent system is a step in the way of that. It's going the opposite direction and saying, well, some things just still aren't that easy. And the question is that a good thing? Does that make us have better choices and more things in the marketplace because it protects innovation and companies can sink a lot of money in R&D? Or is it counterproductive and saying, you know, we don't need to be sinking a bunch of money in these things if the only thing we're sinking money is in patent? That's the question.
And that's the great thing about this case, because if this result is crazy and people don't like it, this could lead to patent reform. Because if it's supposed to be like, okay, wait a second, Samsung has to pay this company $1 billion because of these things. If that seems crazy enough, then people should get angry and say, look, we have to make this different. Maybe patents need to be shortened. Or maybe for technology, we should have FRAND in the U.S. like they have in the EU. Like, maybe there should be some changes. So it's results like this that should get people noticing, because this is like a big story to go, wait a minute, that system shouldn't work like that. We got to go fix it.
And here, another thing that a lot of people probably don't realize that came out in these jury interviews, Apple had unregistered trade claims that were not found to be infringed upon by Samsung. Things like the rounded corners that everyone always picks on. The jury said, we're not going to rule in Apple's favor in these cases because we're not going to play the patent office. The patent office didn't give them protection for rounded corners. Then that's between them and the patent office. The jury decided we're not going to get in the business of giving them patents. And so they didn't rule in Apple's favor on those particular cases. I see a lot of people saying, you know, rounded corners, this and that. That actually was one that Apple didn't win upon so much. So let's move on to the other side of this, which is, how is it actually going to affect us?
Yeah, what's next?
As users, right? Because I posted what I thought was a very non-controversial post on Twitter this weekend saying, like, while this is a very important case, it's easy to overemphasize because there are so many other cases going on. And I had a couple of fanboys come after me saying I'm not being supportive enough, you know, that I'm diminishing Apple's win here. What is it going to mean to us, though?
All right, so what's next? A Morgan Stanley analyst thinks that the next iPhone's going to get a boost because Samsung's not going to be able to put out their phones right away. Also thinking that this could be longer product cycles, because now every manufacturer needs to be quite aware of that Apple's patents were held valid. So they have to figure out, okay, what do we do that's similar? So even if Apple hasn't gone after a company like HTC or something, HTC might want to reevaluate what they're doing right now before anything else happens, because Apple at this point
has this nice precedent.
Absolutely. And Apple's closing arguments show that it's not impossible to work around these things. They actually cited the Nokia Lumia and Xperia Arc S, which is by Sony Ericsson, as models of functional alternative designs. So the thing is, some people are thinking that, okay, will people move to Microsoft and RIM now? Well, they're going to move to BlackBerry because Android's all mired in trouble. Don't forget, Android, by the way, manufacturers are paying Microsoft license fees for patents that are related to Android's core functionality. Google said that most of the claims in the Samsung case don't relate to the core Android operating system.
They relate to TouchWiz stuff. Yeah.
It's TouchWiz stuff. So the thing is, what is this? Like, is Android going to get more expensive, or do you think people are going to move towards just a plain old vanilla version of Google Android? Because that right now is pretty safe.
And I would love to see the plain old vanilla Google Android. The Google Experience phones have gotten better and better. I mean, if you look at the Jelly Bean Google Experience phones, I would say I'm finally at a point where I could throw away TouchWiz. So if all of these patents only are infringed upon by previous versions of Android and Samsung TouchWiz, does Samsung just say, fine, you know what, everything is plain Jane vanilla Android here, and so now it's on Google.
Yeah, Google has seen this coming miles and miles away, and that's why they're willing to come out and say, we don't think the current interface infringes on this. We don't think it's infected by this. We've been working ahead of this. The patent wars are not going to go away. Motorola and Apple, as we mentioned in the news fuse, are still in a tussle. There's other Samsung, Apple patent cases out there waiting for appeals and working their way through courts in the UK and Australia and Korea. And Microsoft is out there putting pressure on people to license things. But those wheels move very slowly. And the thing that causes the problems, the fact that tech moves so fast, is also the thing that solves a lot of the problems, because we're going to move past a lot of this stuff before it really has any eventuality. I think it's a bump in the road for Samsung. It's going to cause them some problems. They're going to have to go back and reevaluate a lot of the TouchWiz. But I think they already did that in the Galaxy S3. So I don't think you're going to see a huge problem for Samsung. I think you're going to see Microsoft making hay out of this as much as they can. They're going to get some extra meetings with manufacturers that they might not have got before, because manufacturers are going to be a little nervous and wanting to make sure they're hedging their bets. But I don't see this like drastically changing the smartphone marketplace.
And then I'm thinking about Google, what changes they've done to Android. I mean, something as simple as that, you know, show your face to unlock. I mean, that immediately goes around patents right away. I mean, the reason why these TouchWiz UIs and Sense UI came out in the first place because the first version of Android was really rough. At this point, it's mature enough, I think, that it's not necessary at this juncture. Maybe there's some customizations you need to do so your device doesn't seem all the same, but you can work around so much using Google's base Android at this point.
All right, let's move forward into the future and look at a horse that isn't quite as dead that we can beat. Apple rumors. We're going to have an Apple announcement.
Let's
here
walk down to the rumor mill, everybody.
Okay.
Did you all bring your lunch?
Or my hiking shoes.
Good.
Can I have your sandwich?
Yes.
Okay.
Twinkie.
So these are all rumors at this point. We only have about 2 weeks if that announcement even ends up being on September 12th. But let's just say, for the sake of argument, that it will be. We've got a couple more weeks of rumors on this show before you guys can blissfully stop hearing them, at least for another 6 months or so. Mako Takara is identifying, there's another image leak. They're identifying what looks like a square component with an EMI covering as an NFC sensor. Now, what's interesting about these leaks is not only is the iPhone 5 or next gen iPhone, whatever it shall be called, it's really the sixth gen iPhone, It seems to have, there have been a lot of leaks. Now, some of these might be complete bunk. There are always a certain percentage of, hey, this is what the iPhone's going to look like. We've got these photos from, you know, a manufacturer, blah, blah, blah. But there have been quite a few of them. And some have started to match up because they're coming from multiple sources. These particular photos that show possibility of an NFC sensor came from the same photo booking account as leaked front casing pictures came out in mid-July, so a few weeks ago. The images, both the earlier ones and these latest pictures that show a more assembled iPhone, match up with images leaked from other sources. So by no means does this mean it's a done deal, but it's starting to look like it could be legitimate. Pictures published by iLab seem to have an empty space next to the FaceTime camera, which is now centered, possibly meant to house a sensor. So if you take the latest leak at face value, looks like we might be seeing NFC bundled into the new iPhone. Now,
I
folks are saying
pretty good bet anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially with passport. What is the
passbook? Passbook is something. If you remember the announcement when Apple detailed what iOS 6 would have, Passbook was one of those new features not available yet to anybody with iOS 5, which is the whole group boarding passes and tickets and coupons and things like that into one place that would work with other apps. So, for example, Starbucks. Starbucks has its own app or various apps that you can use to buy movie tickets through. Once those are purchased, Passbook would attempt to organize them all in one place. So it's not like a Google Wallet competitor. It's different. It's more for tickets and advance purchases and daily deals and stuff like that. Something that NFC could certainly incorporate into. Gate changes, for example, when you're about to take a flight. But these are all, this is just the latest of what are, you know, a growing list of long iPhone rumors. Ars Technica has actually a very good roundup of. These are all the rumors that we think are pretty solid. And if they're not solid, here's why. We've got LTE, of course. Ours says, you know, the A5X chip was introduced in the latest iPad. The iPhone 4S already has the A5 chip. They say, you know, most of that A5X seems to be something that needs more processing power just because the iPad's screen is so much larger. So, you know, there's more dense pixelation. But there are rumors on a quad-core A6. Whether Apple or not needs that, I mean, it might be a little bit more of the keeping up with the Joneses type of a thing. We've talked about it on this show before, where quad-core doesn't always necessarily give you better performance, but perception is that if it's quad-core, it's definitely better than dual-core.
Apple's pretty good about not doing that if they don't need to, if they're not going to take some advantage of it, though. So I'm curious whether they actually go that way, and if they do, how they justify it.
If they're putting in a larger screen and LTE, they're going to want battery savings. So if you put in a more hungry processor, that's a bad idea.
A6
seems like it's destined for the iPad, and then probably the 6S or the 5S, whatever they're going to call the next version, that's not even out yet from the ones that's not out yet.
Apple doesn't play the spec game. I mean, it's not a good game for them to play. They haven't played the spec game. They could start playing it, but that'd be silly because it's not about spec. It's about experience. So Apple's thing is always, look, you will get what you need to get in order to get the experience we want you to have. And Apple users, that's what they buy. That's what they want.
All right, let's take a quick break. Thank our other sponsor for today's show, RingCentral. When Leo built the studio here, he wanted to do as much as we could through the internet, using new technologies, not bringing in a bunch of old stuff. So we store documents in the cloud. We hold meetings over the internet and in the cloud. And we didn't want a big old PBX system in the basement. If you don't know what PBX is, that's the thing that runs telephones for most heritage buildings. So Russell, our IT guy, said, let's get a cloud-based phone system through RingCentral, and it was a no-brainer. We love RingCentral. Zero startup costs, no bunch of hardware to install or maintain. RingCentral allows us to easily customize all of our call handling. We can get our voicemail in our email. We can get all our fax messages right on the smartphones. And believe people still want to fax you, and if you're befuddled by that sometimes, this makes it easy because you can say, oh yeah, I do have a fax machine. I don't really have a machine, but you can still fax me stuff. RingCentral offers all-inclusive pricing as low as $20 per month per user. You can start right now with a 30-day risk-free trial, and they have a special offer for our listeners. When you buy one desk phone, get a second phone for free, and you can do that for up to 20 phones. So call this number. It's the number just for our listeners, 800-543-9980. That's 800-543-9980. Once again, 800-543-9980. Or you can also go to ringcentral.com and use promo code TWIT. That's ringcentral.com, promo code TWIT. We thank them for their support of Tech News Today. All right. Now, this is not actually a rumor. This is a fact. This is a conversation had with someone and someone talking on the record. Fortune reports that Pacific Crest analyst Andy Hargreaves was speaking with Apple CFO Peter Oppenheimer and Senior Vice President of Internet Software and Services Eddie Q about the much-discussed Apple television. Not the Apple TV hobby box, but the television, right? Apple, like, bringing you TV service. And here's what Hargreaves wrote. Unfortunately for Apple and for consumers, acquiring rights for traditional broadcast and cable network content outside of the current bundled model is virtually impossible because the content is owned by a relatively small group of companies that have little interest in alternative models for their most valuable content. That's from Eddie Q. Eddie Q told Hargreaves that. So now, there's a limit on what Apple can tell people as far as insider knowledge when they're talking to these analysts, but they're definitely sending the signal that an Apple TV is not coming anytime soon, and it's the cable TV companies that you have to blame.
Yeah, this seems to be less of a let's play coy and really wow you at our next event, and more of a this is something that nobody seems to be able to solve.
Yeah.
Apple as well.
I feel like Apple's kind of frustrated with these long, ongoing negotiations with the cable companies that they can't get a single one of them to work with them. And so they're kind of complaining to the analysts, like pushing it out there. Like maybe if people talk about it and put some pressure, one of these cable companies will buckle. And they're saying, hey, don't blame us. I know you'd all love us to come out with a TV, but those guys won't budge from their old bundled model.
To which I say, have you not been watching the industry for the past 10 years? I mean, have you not seen what every other manufacturer who has tried to do this model has run into? This isn't a surprise for Apple. I think what's a surprise is they couldn't force the content owners like they did with iTunes.
Yeah, this isn't about the hardware. This is about the deals. And with iTunes, they were able to convince the music industry. The music industry later regretted being convinced. But all in all, it was a good thing for them, I think. So that's one model, is you can drag them kicking and screaming, or you can do what Amazon did with the Kindle. And the publishers have not had a golden road, but it's been much smoother transitioning to e-books. Cable TV industry looks like it's saying, yeah, we want to go the kicking and screaming route.
What if this is blatant misdirection? Like, it's so hard. We don't want anybody else trying this, too. No. You never want to talk to the cable companies. It's very, well, very hard.
Yeah.
It is hard,
with
though.
HBO on your Apple TV.
Yeah.
Buy it today.
It's like, oh, there'll never be video on the iPod, right? Never. It'll never happen.
That's a fair point. They do that. But I do think they're trying to put a little extra pressure on the negotiations because we know how difficult it is to get the cable companies to allow the streaming. And part of it is not just the cable companies. Part of it is the networks who say, well, we don't want you to make our content available to people in other ways. So there's a tension between them over who gets to control the content.
Or the content creators you know, if they were to sign, let's use HBO as an example again. HBO signs a deal with Apple. Now we've got, you know, HBO Go and the Apple TV type of a thing. And you know, the cable operators say, well, screw you. Now you don't have an agreement with us anymore. HBO loses.
Right.
They don't make more money with Apple. They
exactly.
make less.
It's
so their
kind
hands
of a,
are tied, even if they want to be innovative.
It's a bad
forward.
Relationship that neither party can get out of.
But, I mean, I could also see why this is so frustrating for them. Because if you look at the Apple release model, which, again, has worked incredibly well for them. You look at iTunes, you wrap up exclusive deals with music rights holders. You look at the iPhone, you wrap up the multi-touch sensor for a year, meaning that you have a year head start on all your competitors. You look at the Retina displays, you buy out the supply, which means that no one else can make a screen that's as beautiful as yours. That's one of the keys for their launch. They don't just want to launch a good product. They want to launch a great product that no one else can copy for a given amount of time.
Right.
So for this to work, they don't just have to get the rights holders for TV and movies to come along with them. They have to get them to agree to say, we want you to come with us, and you're not going to do it to anybody else for 6 months, 18 months, whatever.
Yeah, good point. We'll talk about more about this on frame rate later on with Brian Brushwood. But let's move on. We got a couple more stories to discuss before we get out of here. Samsung unveiling... Yeah, hold on. Don't turn off. It's not about patents. Samsung unveiling a new product.
Hardware. I love talking about hardware. So Samsung introduced the Galaxy Player 5.8. Now, if you're wondering what the 5.8 means, it's the screen size. It's an LCD 5.8-inch display with a resolution of 960 by 540. It's running Android 4.0, 16GB and 32GB variants with micro SD slots, front-facing camera, things like pricing and availability probably going to be out soon. And so I guess this has me really kind of wondering, where is the line between a tablet and a media player at this point? 5.8?
Apparently 6 inches.
Or is it 7? This is the thing. There's a rumor,
somewhere in there,
6.9.
Yeah.
There's a rumor of an iPad mini coming out at 7.8. That's a tablet. Everyone's thinking that's a tablet. The iPod Touch is not a tablet because it's 3.2. Is 5.8 like...
It's phablet.
It's fab. Now we have another thing. Again with this?
No, that's a thing. Yeah.
With the Note?
Yeah, that's a
Samsung.
Yeah,
was
thing.
That a
5.3? I didn't just make that up.
Yeah.
People call it phablet.
Is that still really around? But that was gone.
Well, I mean, we're talking about difference of a couple of inches here or there.
Well,
it's in phablet territory.
If you have a 7-inch iPad mini, does that really just become the new iPod Touch?
Well,
a lot of folks have speculated that it should be.
It should be, right?
There's a rumor that the next iPod Nano is going to get Wi-Fi, direct downloads from iTunes, iTunes Match capabilities. So a lot more in line with the iPod Touch. So the thing is, well, I guess I'm really... I'm just confused about this. The personal media player market is dying, except when it's a tablet.
And Samsung's coming out with lots of personal media players still. So what are they seeing that nobody else is?
You know, I keep thinking that there are people out there who just don't want to be on contracts. That would be me. Mm-hmm. And you can use a lot of these devices tethered like a handset. One of the cool things about these Samsung Galaxy players is it actually has a piece so you can hold it up to your ear. Now, 5.8 might be a little ridiculous to hold up to your ear. But
well, holding up an iPad to take a picture is pretty ridiculous too.
I do that.
Holding up a Galaxy Note to your ear is not, you know,
it's not that far.
It's not that far off.
But yeah, I don't know what Samsung's seeing in the personal media player market. But if you just call it a tablet, it seems like that's really working now.
Call it what you will. I think what we're seeing is there are various use cases for various form factors, and we are beginning to see something that I read MIT predict back in like 1998 that. Function and form are going to deviate. And what we're going to do is have devices that are built for the function that we're using them for, right? So in some cases, that's a tablet because I need a bigger screen, but I'm sitting down and I'm slightly mobile, right? I'm sitting down, but I want to get up and easily take it around with me. Or a laptop because I'm a little more stable and I want to have that keyboard. Or something that can be a laptop and a tablet in between. Or maybe, a 6-inch screen. You know what? I like these smaller devices that aren't phones, but I just need a little bigger screen. And some people like you are saying, well, I don't really want to be tied to a contract. I just want to have that 5.8-inch screen. So we're seeing everybody trying these different areas, and good on Samsung for saying, well, let's put something out there that hits a spot that's not dominated by anybody.
And this is no surprise actually coming from Samsung too, because they've been playing around with all of these different sizes and form factors for a while now. They're throwing so much stuff out there at these different sizes. It doesn't surprise me at all to see that Samsung's the one that's doing this right now, because that's just kind of been their MO lately.
And let's finish off with Facebook.
Woo-hoo.
Facebook's building a new campus.
Chaser. Yeah, this is actually it's a pretty lofty campus, at least what we know about it right now. Frank Gehry is going to design the custom-build campus. In fact, you saw pictures of him over the weekend looking at kind of a mock-up of what the campus would look like, with Zuckerberg looking over and going, oh, you know, very excited about that. If you're not familiar with this particular designer, he designed the Guggenheim Museum in Bilbao, Spain, the Walt Disney Concert Hall in Los Angeles. So he's kind of big and crazy and very forward-thinking. He's a pretty big deal as far as architecture goes. Now, Facebook's current headquarters used to be Sun's headquarters. So they've gotten bigger. They've moved around a couple times, but they've never actually had a custom campus designed from scratch, from the ground up, to call their own. They do have space across the way from where their headquarters are now. So it's land that they own, and that's where this is going to be. But it's huge. I mean, it's airplane hangar type huge. There's a conflicting reports as to how many people would actually work inside the new headquarters, but some say up to 3,400 engineers, so space for 3,400 engineers in a single building, but would have reconfigurable workspace, meeting space, walls that can move, and even a living roof. For anybody who's not familiar with the concept of a living roof, it's where you actually have grass and foliage that can grow on top of the building, which not only can look nice, certainly if you've got a huge campus, you want, you know, trees on top of it, but can also help with the costs of running AC, climate control, that sort of thing. Not a new concept, but, you know, for a big building like this, it would be an undertaking, certainly. There's also a tunnel that's going to connect Facebook's current campus with the new, as yet to be built, campus.
Please say they're going to build a human-sized pneumatic tube that you can fly through the tunnel.
You had me a tunnel.
Yeah, isn't that fun? I think the idea now is, you know, just sort of an easy way to move people from one building to the other. But then there's also, if you look on the northern side of the two buildings, the new buildings, but they're actually, it's technically two buildings, although it looks like one. It looks like a couple of water slides, and you're like, whoa, this is where things get really crazy. But the purpose is not as exciting as an actual water slide. They're just curved walkways that will take people from the office space down to the parking structure that will be underneath the building.
Please turn them into water slides.
Well, yeah. I mean, you got to get to your car quickly, right?
All of this a long way, because we aren't architecture dudes today, of saying Facebook seems to be very confident about their income stream here.
Exactly.
They're not just building a new building or leasing a new office space. They're building something huge.
That wouldn't even be, if approved, which it has not yet been by the city of Menlo Park, and obviously residents who are allowed to weigh in on the implications of, you know, what it's going to do to traffic and that sort of thing. Even if approved, they wouldn't be breaking ground until 2013, and it would take at least 2 years to build. So we're looking several years out.
Yeah.
Even if this is approved. So, yeah, you think Facebook, we've talked about it a lot on the show recently, because since the IPO, things haven't been so awesome for the stock, for people coming and going, for, you know, anybody who uses the Facebook Android app, for example. Facebook's got some work to do, but they're certainly confident enough.
Is this denial? I mean, because you've got a stock that is slipping. You've got people who are sort of opening their eyes and saying, whoa, maybe this is just another MySpace. Maybe Facebook only has another 4 or 5 years left before it just starts tanking. But they're building a headquarters for an epic empire that will last centuries. Is this just Mark Zuckerberg with his head in the sand saying, no, we're still fine, we're still fine? Or do you think the fundamentals of the company are actually as sound as it looks like they believe they are?
Well, this giant open floor plan that they're talking about, I mean, this is something that I believe Pixar used as well. The concept is you can spur ideas, because people have these chance meetings all the time, because you're not stuck in cubicles and things. Like, you know, Twit here, we have very open floor plan, and we end up bouncing ideas off each other, at least I do. But the thing is, I think this is about Facebook wants to continue to grow. You put enough people in the same room. They're not changing like their attitude. They're not putting people in offices and putting people away. Conceptually, this could help them grow, because they need to figure out, what are we going to do for the next, you know, 5 to 10 years? We need to figure out what's going to allow us to come up with ideas faster and faster. By having this 10-acre room, there's a good chance that they could continue to come up with ideas.
So confidence, hubris, what do you think it is?
What do I think? Yeah, I think it's confidence.
Yeah.
I don't think that Facebook has does not have their monetization of mobile figured out. That's their big problem. They're working on it. I don't see their stock just continuing to tank and that they're just going to shut their doors the next couple of years.
I think
they're having growing pains.
I think Mark Zuckerberg cares not one whit about the stock market. He didn't want to go into it, but he had to. And now that he's out there, he's like, I don't care what the stock price is. I believe that my company is going to do this, and so I'm going to act that way.
Right.
And he's got the flexibility to do that because of the amount of shares he owns and the way he did his IPO. So this is a symptom of that. You wouldn't see this in other public companies. Let's move on to the randomizer.
Randomizer.
A Chinese gamer who I believe was like getting ready to get married decided to change his ways, make atonement, and bring back dozens of space bars that he stole from an internet cafe because he was annoyed by people playing Audition Online, which means you have to repeatedly tap the keyboard. So he had gone around stealing space bars off of the keyboards.
That's totally reasonable.
But he's seen the error of his ways.
Right, and he's returned. I don't know what the cafe is going to do with all these
space bars. Typing without
space bars
is really annoying.
I just love the idea that he was so annoyed, he just went to every keyboard, removed them, kept them. That's the other thing. He didn't throw them out or anything. He kept them to return them or bought replacement ones, I guess. It just seems like, okay, this is one way to start a new life. You're like, congratulations, here's a space bar.
According to Kotaku, the cafe owner had to install CCTV cameras to stop the space bar theft. Maybe he should pay for those CCTV cameras.
Now, these are space bars on keyboards. There's not a space bar being robbed, like I thought when I first read the story.
That's too bad.
He's pretty good, right? I guess a space bar, you know, you get the right tool, it'll just pop right off.
Yeah.
Can you imagine going into, you know, internet cafe, you're like, I really got to get into my email and see if my mom wired me that money. I'm far from home. And you're like, there's no space bar on this. No, there's no space bar on that machine either.
There's still the sensor
underneath. What kind of internet cafe is it?
Yeah. I don't have a problem with the space bar. I want people to remove the shift key and the caps lock to get rid of all those people who are always yelling. I mean, come on.
That was a thread in the user-friendly comic strip. Back like 10 years ago. They're rerunning all of those right now. And there were these keyboards without shift or caps lock so that you couldn't type angrily.
We could have the mods send those out to a few
people. Yeah, for sure. All right, let's move on to the calendar.
So tomorrow is where you can start personalizing your jam box. This is for Jawbone insiders and clout users who get a one-week head start over the great unwashed. Otherwise, just the general public. And the next Battlefield 3 download is deploying September 4th.
All right.
Incoming message.
Message.
This is not a grenade.
Email from Paul in Reading, Pennsylvania, says, I heard you discussing the Amazon press conference set for September. I was wondering if, in addition to a new Kindle Fire, would Amazon announce a set-top box like the Google TV? Since they've been focused on improving their Amazon Prime offering, a set-top box seems to me the logical next step. Now, my first reaction to this from Paul was like, well, they don't do that already, right? They already make Kindles, so it's not too much of a stretch to go into making tablets. But then remember, they didn't make Kindles before they made Kindles. So we don't have any inside information. There's no credible leaks or anything that they would be doing this. But Amazon definitely trying to build video content as one of their offerings, the way they built book content. And the natural strategy for them was to come out with an e-reader to capture more of the market. Would it make sense for them to come out with their own set-top box based on Android with the things that they've learned from making the Kindle Fire?
I would think Amazon Instant Video is available on a lot of products, but a lot of people don't realize it's there. I mean, the Roku is a really good box for that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But if Amazon could just basically take a Kindle, take off the screen and put like an HDMI out, they effectively have that box. So if they take the Kindle Fire, the old one, and revamp it, I think this would be pretty smart if they actually did this, because then they can control the experience a little bit more, because I know the Amazon app on Roku at first was just horrible. It's gotten a lot better, but I think Amazon could do a better job if they were controlling it entirely with their own piece of hardware.
I actually love this idea because they've already got Amazon Prime. So they've got the customers who are always coming back to Amazon. They did that video rollout for Amazon Prime users. You give them a device like this and say, look, here's a low-cost device, something on par with the expense of a Roku, that will stream our Amazon Prime movies straight to your TV. Actually, after it's made, it'll seem like a no-brainer.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen, but I kind of intrigued by the possibility.
Cool.
All right, we got one more email.
Yeah, we do. From Ali, a.k.a. 40 Thieves in chat, who writes, just wanted to point out that Facebook's old iOS and current Android app was not HTML5, so it makes me sad panda when I hear about people suggesting that HTML5 is slower. Here's why. The app originates from Apache Cordova, a project designed to enable developers to write code in HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, and then convert them to lower-level languages like Objective-C. This means that they can run as compiled apps on multiple platforms. Cordova does this by wrapping your code in a web view object with a native app, basically running a mini browser in your app which can display your HTML. It also gives hooks into the OS's capabilities that aren't provided by the browser, like camera access. Sounds great. What's the problem? This web view is never as fast or as efficient as a real browser. It's not considered a priority by the OS developers because of that. Secondly, the moniker HTML5 is probably a close second to 4G in the misused words category. HTML5 refers to a collection of separate technologies and APIs that are slowly being built into browsers. It's not some sort of magical wand that suddenly turns your website into rainbows and unicorns. I'm glad that you laid that out for me because I was confused. The majority of the spec is either not supported by all browsers, especially mobile, or incomplete. The TLDR version is, Tom's right, web apps are difficult, but will beat native apps eventually, and HTML5 is a hideously misused term.
40 Thieves, thank you, my friend, for laying that all out for us. That was excellent.
I wish Facebook would do the same, because when you go to Facebook's blog that explains what they've done with their latest iOS app, they say, it used to be HTML5, and now it's native, and now it's faster.
I love this email. It was informative, and there was a TLDR version at the end.
I know, right?
Absolutely fantastic.
Brilliant.
Thank you.
All right, that's it for this episode of Tech News Today. Thanks, everybody, for watching, for submitting stories in our subreddit at technewstoday.reddit.com, helping us put the stories together every day. Thank you, Father Robert, for being here again. Great to have you.
It's always good to be here. I mean, there's no place I'd rather be. TNT.
I'm glad to hear that. And you can catch Father Robert on This Week in Enterprise Tech.
Just 2 hours from now.
Yeah.
First of all, there's a show between TNT and my show. It's just fantastic. I can't remember. It's something about the iPad. It's just wonderful. Just brilliance.
iPhone, you mean?
iPhone.
Yeah, it's not really a show. It's the making of behind the scenes of i5.
But the thing is, if you're watching this episode of Tech News Today on demand, you can travel through time and watch those shows whenever you want. Just go subscribe at twit.tv. And thanks, everybody, for watching or listening. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us. Our email address is tnt@twit.tv. And you can phone us. We probably won't pick up, but you can leave us a message. 260-TNT-SHOW. Harry McCracken joins us tomorrow. We'll see you then.
Jazz hands.